Ladies and gentlemen, Hakaras HaTov is very, very important. It's the basis of our way of life. The number one, Jeffrey, thank you so much for the sound system. In advance, to the Marmers, we thank you very much for the upcoming refreshments after the talk of Rabbi Rakefet. So once again, we're the Marmers. Thank you very much. Yaakov Azulai, thank you for setting things up. This afternoon, we have the great, great pleasure of hearing Rabbi Rakefet. And as I tell people, I only spent only a year or so with Rav Soloveitchik. This gentleman spent almost a lifetime with him. Nevertheless, whenever I read something of Rav Soloveitchik, I don't see the words. I see the person standing in front of me. It's a big difference, let alone what this rabbi has, the memories of this unusual, gifted Talmud Chacham. We welcome you, and it's a gute Woche, and it's wonderful having you. And above all, Rabbi Rakefet, thank you very much for, number one, refreshing wonderful memories, and number two, for enlightening us. Really is a kavod and an honor having you. And without further ado, oh yeah, Where's Dr. Dennis? Oh, right over here. He has many reasons for being distinguished. Yeah, please all turn off your cell phones while we're talking about it. Thank you. But Dr. Dennis has many reasons to be distinguished, primarily because he's my dentist. So if the drushes come out halfway decent on Shabbos, halfway decent, Dr. Dennis, thank you very much. Anyway, it's my great, great kavod and honor to present Rabbi Rakefet, who will further not entertain us, but enlighten us. Thank you.
Once again, I see there's no clock that I can visibly see, which shows that you trust your rabbi. Once again, I want to mention the three topics I've spoken about last night, this afternoon, and this evening, are topics that your people chose. In 1956, I was a junior in Yeshiva College, and of course, the Sinai campaign broke out, and here we were, kids sitting in class. Most of my classmates were second-generation survivors themselves. I was one of the few kids whose parents were born in Harlem, and we were just stunned. We're hearing on the news that Israeli paratroopers have jumped behind Egyptian lines, if you recall the Mittler Pass, and have captured Sinai. And we were sitting there, the shadow of Hitler, the crematoriums, the 6 million. And we were just shaking with joy, with tears. And if someone would have tapped me on the shoulder and said to me, Ani, in a number of years, you're going to do basic training. All your children, army, all your grandchildren, and among them I have today 4 with paratrooper wings, many more in the army, but in different units. Sitting here is a student of mine, Naomi Weiss. She just showed me a picture, Naomi HaKohen, when she was my student, of her son with paratrooper wings. And this is just an amazing story. Perhaps the greatest miracle to happen to the Jewish people since Churban HaBayit, that we Jews, so far from arms, guns, tanks, planes, missiles, have created per capita the most powerful and feared army in the entire world, Be'ezrat Hashem. And I want to talk about this story. How did it begin? from the time that Jews started coming to Eretz Yisrael, returning to Eretz Yisrael, on to 130 years ago, we were hated. Obama and Cohn/Kerry cannot understand. The Arabs do not want us there, period. And this is a fact of life. We belong in Europe. Go back where you came from. Today, if we go back to Europe, we have to become Muslims anyway. So it's not going to help much. And because they didn't want us there and don't want us there, and the murderer who ran away, it's mind-boggling. He walked freely in an Arab village that is part of the State of Israel, recognized even by the American State Department and the UN, and he was given food and shelter after killing two Jews and a wonderful citizen of the State of Israel who happened to be Muslim, father of 13 children, the cab driver. And nevertheless, they gave him food and protected him until Friday. Thank God we caught up with him. Well, Habola Hagecha Hashken V'Hargol. There's no greater concept than self-defense. There's no greater concept of a Milchemet Mitzvah. If you're familiar with the Sugya, Masechet Saita, Daf Mem Dalet, Mem Hei, the Rambam, Hilchot Melachim, Perek Zayin, Milchemet Mitzvah, self-defense. Originally, self-defense meant, and they called them by an Aramaic word that we find in the Medrash, Neturikata, Notrim. Notrim means people who watch. Neturikata, people who protect the city. So, you lived on a farm, you lived Yerushalayim, Haifa, Tel Aviv, you went out at night, and you protected your homestead. When you came home, if you were a kosher Jew, you ate in your house, it was kosher. If you were out for the night, your wife packed some sandwiches for you, it was kasher. Shabbat, if you didn't have to stand guard, you had a minyan, Kriyat HaTorah, a drasha, a dafyomi, all that went with it. By the 1930s, or to be more exact, the 1920s, the Notrim morph developed into what we called Haganah. The word Haganah means defense. Originally, the Haganah never left home. It was defense around where you lived. By the 1930s, that wasn't enough. The Arabs had to be attacked. We had to go on the offensive. And you have the formation, it branches off from the Haganah, what's called the Palmach. Palmach, an abbreviation for Plugot Mochets. Divisions that fight, that smack you, that take the offensive. And now for the first time, you have a real difficult problem. In the Palmach, you're leaving home. You're away from home. You can be up north. You can be down south. You can be gone a week. You can be gone 2 weeks. You have all types of Jews. Halavai, the masses of Eastern Europe would have poured into Israel 100 years ago, 115 years ago, would be a different country. Could you imagine if all the Hasidim had come to Israel at that time? But we know what the reality was. So you have some Jews who observe Kashrut, and some Jews, the Kol Rav Shach, who would capture rabbits and roast them. Famous talk of Shach, if you recall, the late 1980s. Now, how do you run a Palmach? What do you do Shabbat? There are Jews who want to daven, Kriyat HaTorah, and other Jews, Shabbat, like any other day. You're not fighting. Drink and be merry. For us, there is no God, there is no Torah, there is no yesterday, there is no tradition. The great rebellion, a people like every other people. We need an army. Fine. How do you work this out? The Palmach into the 40s took the easiest way out. And the easiest way out, what's good for everybody, you ghettoize. You had divisions. You had divisions. I can't speak if someone is speaking. Psychologically, you have to forgive me, but if you're whispering, it hurts my throat. Teaches disease. The Palmach, the easy way out, certain divisions were what we call in modern Hebrew, and no Chabadnik would agree with me for using the term Chiloniyim. And other divisions were called Chativot Datiyot or Plugot Datiyot. Everyone was religious. I still knew the commander of the Jerusalem religious division, Avraham Melamed. He was a full colonel. And we became very friendly because later he was one of the supervisors of the Israeli religious chinuch. And I was teaching in Mechlala. And he befriended me. So one time on Rehov Herzog, he showed me the apartment where Shlomo Gorenchik was a sniper, a sharpshooter. Anyone recognize the name Shlomo Gorenchik? Anybody? Rabbi Shlomo Gorin later. And he was telling me, Tizkar Harav Rakefet, remember, Ani Hayiti Hamafakeid Shel Shlomo Gorenchik. I was his boss in the army, his commander. And this was the easy solution. Religious Jews, Shabbos, Shabbat, Kashrut, whatever you want. Irreligious, whatever you want. Don't bother me. We won't bother you. Democracy, freedom of choice, everything that is part of the modern Haaretz scene, if you understand what I'm referring to in Israel. In 47, something happened that was quite dramatic and woke up a lot of people. There was a problem with Syria. Arms were coming over a bridge about 22 kilometers into Syria, and unless that bridge was blown up, we feared that the entire Galil would ultimately be captured by the Arabs. The Palmach sat, planned, and whatever plan they came up with, they came to Ben-Gurion, BG, or the Zaken, as he was called in Israel, and they said to BG, we have this plan, we can get them in. The minute they blow up the bridge, they will be discovered, they will be wiped out. What do we do? And this is sending an entire unit to its death. And Ben-Gurion said, I quote, send in the Frum division from Bnei Brak, maybe their God will save them. And they went in, blew up the bridge. Most of them were wiped out. The old-timers in Bnei Brak used to tell me that there was one day where endless people said Kaddish in Bnei Brak. It was the descendants of this pluga. The Chazon Ish was hysterical. He said immediately, disband the religious units or Ben-Gurion will kill them all with this type of thinking. Before any decision could be made, war broke out, Milchemet HaShichrua, the War of Liberation, 48, 49. And finally, there is a truce. And one of the first laws passed by the Knesset that there will no longer be various defense forces, not the Palmach, not Eitzel, not Lechi, all the divisions. They will all give in their arms, unite, and form Tzva Haganah LiYisrael, known in English as the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, one army. Now the question was, what do you do in the army? And there was a big debate. Some of the Mizrahi people were in favor of keeping separate units. But Ben-Gurion got up in the Knesset, and he has to be given a lot of credit. On the 100th anniversary of his birth, there was a tremendous debate among scholars why Ben-Gurion did this. Did he really mean it, or did he believe in another 20, 30 years there won't be a religious Jew left in Israel? Everyone will be part of the new world, the new rebellion. And we'll give in now for a short while. It's a debate that goes on until today. I can speak on that topic endlessly, but it's not for now. Ben-Gurion got up in the Knesset, it's 49, and Ben-Gurion said in his Yiddish-accented Hebrew, native language was Yiddish, spoke English well, lived in New York for a while in World War I time, and in his Hebrew, he got up and said, in our army, every soldier will have a military belt. It's called in Hebrew a chagorah, chagorah tzvait. And on that belt, like any other army in the world, there will be room for bullets, grenades, a canteen. And for those who wish, there will be room for tefillin. And by the law of the land of Israel, the army has to be kosher. The army has to observe Shabbat. Everyone serves in one army, and a chayal who doesn't keep kosher can eat kosher. It won't harm him. But a chayal who keeps kosher must eat kosher. He can't eat anything else. In order for kashrut to be legitimate, you can't have food cooked on Shabbat. And this began a procedure in the army that continues until today. Now, let me be honest. Laws are only as good as those that will enforce them. You can have laws in the land today against adultery in the United States. There's no one in the world who will ever be prosecuted in the land of Clinton and Obama for committing adultery. Lo aleinu, you can have laws against same-sex relations, which I can't even mention it. It is so abhorrent. Toeva, the Torah says. But in the world of today, the Supreme Court, with three Jewish votes giving a strong majority, you're not going to prosecute anyone. You can have all the laws in the world in the army, but if out of a little base there are 200 soldiers and only two keep kosher, I can guarantee you they're going to have to eat out of with cans of tuna, and they're not going to be able to eat in the kitchen. But as time progressed, more and more soldiers were religious. As a reflection of the population of Israel, as someone who has lived in Israel 47 years, my wife and I stand in awe. We remember Yerushalayim when we came in Aliyah. If you stood in the street corner and one out of five men walking by had their heads covered, and one out of five married women walking by had their heads covered, you were doing well. Today, you can stand on any street corner and ride in any bus in Yerushalayim, and you'll see that the percentage of people who are obviously Shomrei Torah Mitzvot is well over 70%. In Yerushalayim, surveys have shown kashrut borders on 87%, practically 90%. It's a reflection of the population. Who came in Aliyah? Who are the French that are running in today? The tens of thousands of Russian Balei Tshuva. So the army worked out systems that were second to none. When I did basic training already many decades ago, every kitchen, every army kitchen, only cooked fleishiks and parv. All the milk was given out cold. Every soldier could get two mess kits if he requested it, The food you got was 100% kosher. You could never create a problem because milk never entered the kitchen. Hard cheese, leaven, gil, yogurts were handed to you, but not in the kitchen, outside. In every dining room in the army, there were large notices. Asur lahadlik esh b'shabbat b'pkuda. Pkuda, what does that mean? Let me explain to you. In civilian life, there's what we call in modern Hebrew, bakasha. I can ask someone, bring me a cup of soda. You can bring it or not bring it. A pkuda is a command. If you don't follow the command, you're court-martialed. Forbidden to light fire on Shabbat in the kitchen means to cook, an absolute command. If anyone cooked on Shabbat and people were there who cared, the person who cooked wound up in jail. If he was an officer, he could get as much as 30 days in jail and fined. If he was not an officer, he got a heavy fine, perhaps no jail term or a little jail term. But b'pkuda. I'll explain to you what this means in a lighter fashion, in a real story, only in the Israeli army. A number of years ago in Tel Aviv, in the Central Command Post, the general sitting with his staff asked one of the officers, who was a lady, to bring him a cup of coffee. Make him a cup of coffee. I needn't tell you, if you're familiar with the world of Torah today and Rakefet's lectures in Jerusalem, the biggest problem we face is the question of feminism, which I've devoted so much breath to. I don't have to tell you what's gone in Riverdale in New York or Shira Hadasha in Jerusalem. This lady refused to make the cup of coffee. Who am I? What am I? Make it yourself. The general wanted to court-martial her. And it went before the army judges, and they said, this is not a command. This is a bakasha, not a pkuda. You can't command someone to make a cup of coffee. On the other hand, you want to have civil relations in your office with your staff. And a compromise was reached that made the headlines in every Israeli paper. One day, the lady who was a lieutenant made the cup of coffee for the general, and one day the general made the cup of coffee for the lady. But this is indicative of what some of the problems are. But there are many other problems. These problems are soluble, common sense, the dignity, respect. You can solve them. But there are 1,001 halachic problems that you never envisioned or dreamt about in North Miami Beach or even in Hollywood. We have the Shulchan Aruch. We have Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata. We have so many questions today. A frigidaire, can you open it in Shabbat? Can you go into a room where there's air conditioning, open the door, warm air comes in, the air conditioner kicks off, in reverse with heat? Endless questions. So much has been written. Running an army, we never had that experience. Let me ask you a simple question. When you go into a battle zone, every name, who's going in every jeep, in every car, in every airplane, in every tank, in every half track, in every mobile artillery unit, you have to write down names, who they are. God forbid, a jeep is hit, a tank is hit. You got to know who's in there. No? Can you write down the names on Shabbat? Whoever dreamt of a question like this? I'll ask you another question. You've all learned Masechet Shabbat. Shabbat deals, there's one problem there. What do you do if someone dies on Shabbat? So remember the solution, you bring a challah, you place it on the body, and then you can carry it away because you're being metaltel, davish she'enamuksim, davish she'muksa, permissible. No, could you imagine a battlefield, lo aleinu, and I fought in two wars, I know what a battlefield is. You have bodies, lo aleinu, Shabbat. Soldiers are moving ahead. The last thing in the world that you want to happen is soldiers going to battle are tripping over dead comrades. What do you do on Shabbat? Can you move the bodies back? And you see, endless questions come up that we never dreamt about. You have to get your gun ready on Shabbat. What do you have to do Friday? What are you allowed to clean on Shabbat? Jeeps on patrol. Take the Beit Shan Valley. At one time, it was a hotbed of terrorism. Today, there's a terrorist attack in the Beit Shan Valley, Ein Molin Ayovel. In modern English, once in a few years. Can you have the jeeps running on Shabbat, protecting the people? What do you call Pikuach Nefesh? One out of a million, one out of a thousand, one out of a hundred. These are very serious questions. So much has been written that you would be overwhelmed. I can tell you, you could take this wall and fill it with Sfarim, the entire wall that have been written by rabbis, by the Israeli army rabbinate, by Talmidei Chachamim. You could take from the Tshuvah of Rav Avadya Yosef and others on these military questions. The ones that I asked you, absolutely you have to write down the names on Shabbat, because for moral, the people have to go into battle with peace of mind that the army knows who is who in case anything terrible happens. Soldiers being moved, no question, you have to. Again, pikuach nefesh, the morale of the soldiers has to be kept up. The jeeps, mother is the necessity of invention. You've all heard of Tzomet. They came up with the grummer switch. And just as you see people incapable of walking can go to shul on Shabbos with a little vehicle with a sign on it that this is a Shabbat vehicle, the jeeps that are used by the army in areas that are questionable how much pikuach nefesh there is, the jeeps work on a grummer switch. You know what that means, right? It's not a direct reaction. You turn the motor on, nothing happens. 30 seconds later, the motor kicks off. That is rabbinically prohibited. It's not a Torah prohibition. Your rabbi can give shayurim on this and explain it in detail. And if it's only a rabbinic prohibition, if there's the slightest danger to life, then absolutely you have to go ahead and do it. And I could go on and on with examples, with questions, with solutions. We engendered an army that in theory can function 100% in consonance with the Vahashem Zu Halacha on Shabbat. But it goes further than that. The population of the state of Israel has changed dramatically. As I stated last night, perhaps, or this afternoon, ich gedenk nicht schein, wenn hab das gesagt, I don't remember any when. But I told you I've lived in Israel too long. There used to be a comic script. My father, Zichron Levracha, loved it. You know you lived in Israel too long when the bus driver knows your name. So I say, I know I've lived in Israel too long when I dream in Hebrew. I know I've lived in Israel too long when the head of the Mossad is related to me. I don't have to tell you the new head of the Shin Bet, the Mossad, the police, the new attorney general. They're not only totally religious Jews, that they don't miss davening mincha, but one of them is even Haredi. His kids go to Acheda. He was a major general in the IDF, and he's now the attorney general. His kids go to Acheda in Bnei Brak. So you see, and the head of the Mossad is my relative. It's my brother's wife's cousin, and his parents, Aye and Nina Cohn, were Makarivas when we came in Aliyah with no family in Israel in 1969, and we remained in touch with each other until this very moment on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I daven right next to Aye Cohn, the father of the new head of the Mossad. Times have changed, but not only in that sense, the entire army reflects the population. And when you talk about reflecting the population, if we say today that at least 25% of the Israeli population qualifies to be called Shomrei Shabbat, at least 70-75% are observant, slightly observant, or traditional Mesoratiyim. Kashrut, they appreciate Shabbat. And then, of course, the rebirth of the Haredi world. In America, you have values, you're challenged, you live with dual culture. No, tomorrow morning, you go into a Hasidic shtibl in Borough Park, they daven 1 hour later than they daven during the week. Could you imagine min davened 1 hour later because it's Sunday, the day of Christian worship? Christmas, New Year's, they daven on a Sunday schedule. In my humble opinion, you have a very interesting question here of Aveda Zara, the Gemara at the end of Ktuvat, Kol Hadaba Chutzlaritzki, Ilu Aveda, Aveda Zara. You have challenges here. All right, the Haredim make very nice compromises. I've spoken to Satmar, and I am repelled by their values. Money, making a living. You speak to them about returning to Eretz Yisrael, emulating Avraham Avinu, and they stare at you with a blank stare. In rabbinic Hebrew, man dechashmei. What are you talking about? They have different values. In Israel, we have a tremendous Haredi world. They have been very successful in recent years. They're now entire TV serials, programs, soap operas about the Haredi world. One of them, the 26th series, Hechatzer, was written by my granddaughter-in-law's first cousin. He was the ambassador to England. I'm talking about Danny Bloch, who may have been the greatest Talmud Chacham ever. Danny Taub, excuse me, as a Majestar Nainical. He may have been the greatest Talmud Chacham to represent Israel. A genius. Hechatzer, this is now followed. I trust you recognize what I'm going to say. If you don't, make believe you do so. The ignorant will pass for the wise. Shtissel. You've heard of Shtissel or not? The whole Israeli last year, 12 chapters, this year they began. You cannot believe the impact of these ongoing soap operas of the Hasidic world, the Meisharim world, the Geula world, and even the Haredim who are watching it are praising it. How real, how insightful. And you look at Reb Sholem mit Alanga Bord, Nevi'eret Azashenim Yiddish, and then you see him clean shaven as he reads, a famous actor. And they all, the actors said, as a result of being in these series, they have become frumer. They have a new appreciation for Torah. Well, the Haredi world is blossoming. Blossoming, you need jobs. Not everyone can sit and learn. North Miami Beach can support 100 Haredim. Warren, 1,000 Haredim. But I once said in Lawrence, there are a lot of wealthy people here. I'd like to propose you take on supporting 2 million Haredim. Oh boy, they were not happy. You could see their faces. You got to go to work. In order to go to work, you're taking over the country. If you're taking over the country, you have to defend the country. You have to serve in the army. Ah, so what's happening now? It's beyond comprehension. Someone from this very community, Carmi Gross, Rabbi Gross, my student, my friend, he is now the head of the first Haredi Hezda program with the army. It's a fallout from Machon Lev. You go into Machon Lev, thousands upon thousands of Haredim. You see every type of head covering there. Avishnitzer Chassid, Agera Chassid, Abelzer Chassid, a black kippah, a colorful kippah, what they call a sarug, a kippah strugah. It's an amazing accomplishment. And now the army has other problems. Being kosher, that's not sufficient. You need a Haredi kitchen. Those of you who have Haredi kids, can I inherit? You know, I'm asked right away, do I drink regular milk? I say, look, I'm a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik, there's a famous story in the late 70s when he was surrounded by Misharsim, by Gabayim. He was already weak in health. And almost all the Gabayim were my students. So they tell me a story. He once said he suffered from ulcers, lo aleinu. He said, Bring me a bottle, a pint of milk. I need some milk, a pint of milk. And the Gabayim are whispering, what does he want? Does he want regular milk, Chalav Yisrael? And the Rav turns around and says, what's the problem? Bring me a pint of Delwood milk. Okay? So I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I drink regular milk. But if you have children already, Hasidisha Kindalach, Chabatnikim, they don't drink regular milk. Oh, they just published a memoir in Lakewood that Rav Aaron Cutler drank Breakstone's milk when he came to Lakewood, Breakstone's cheese. And I heard people don't believe it. They think they're making it up. I can tell you it's a fact. When Lakewood began, don't get Mark Shapiro onto this. They did use Breakstone's. Breakstone's was owned by Jews, and they gave it to them wholesale, maybe at cost, maybe even a donation. So, but you're now a Hasidic Yid. You, Chabad, the Shluchim go all over. They have to, when they first arrive in South Korea, they have to bring a cow home to get, I'm serious, to get Chalav Yisrael. It's a real problem. They now opened in Seoul. And I told people about it. It's a real problem. The Israeli army, when I buy something, I see the Heksher. They have to have what's called the double heksha, the rabbinate and a bedatz. It can be a bedatz, it can be that there's a bedatz from Meir Shorim, Eid Haredit. There's Rav Shach's heksha, Sheirit Yisrael. There's the Bell's heksha, there's the Agudat Yisrael heksha, but you have to have two heksherim. The truth of the matter is, it's all one mashgiach. But they have to pay twice over. The mashgiach is accepted by everyone as an, it has to be an elachiyid, but they have to pay twice over. We sent my grandson. You won't believe this. We sent a do me a favor, a cup of soda. We sent my grandson. One of the tzanchanim in the army. Baruch atah melech olam she'kol yemid v'ra'u. So he just finished his jumps, he got his wings, and now he's in advanced training. So we sent him a package 3 weeks ago, and before we left, you know, my wife is a mother, a grandmother, so I had to run the day I'm flying, I had to run to the post office, wait in line, and get the package out. But they're very nice. Big package, 12 shekel, it's a special rate for the army. And the lady, and you know, I open my big mouth. This is my 12th in the army, and my 13th is going in August. You have a whole discussion over the army and your grandchildren. So when we sent them the package a few weeks ago, He calls to thank us, but he has one request. We sent, among everything else, about 6 bars of Elite chocolate. There's some Haredim in his unit we need with the Badats. So in the next package, we sent 4 of Elite and 2 from Tzfat that has a double Hechsha. Baruch Hashem, they should all have what they need. I have to tell you, the army has undertaken tremendous steps to make everything available to the Haredim. You may have read that all the meat used in the army today is glatt kasher. They found that it was cheaper to buy 100 tons of glatt than to divide up the order, 70 tons regular kosher and 30 tons glatt. Everything today is glatt. All the dairy products, double hashgacha. Everything is made available. The units that are totally Haredi, like Nachal Haredi and their other units, in those units, women do not serve. And there's a beautiful memoir from David Zeldin. If you read modern Hebrew, I highly recommend it. Haredim La'atidam, I believe is the title. It's a play on words. Haredim, they're frightened for the future. Haredim. And he writes how he was a Nachal Haredi, and one time there's an alert, the whole base is told they have to stay indoors, no one can go outside. And they thought, who knows what's happening, they're under attack. Turned out a female soldier mistakenly entered the grounds that were cordoned off to women. And they put the whole base under alert until they got the woman out. But we have no choice. The Haredim will be the majority, Be'ezrat Hashem. They will be in the army. You see already how many full major generals there are with big kippot. It's a different army. It's a different world. We have to accommodate. And I'll tell you in parentheses to the covet of the Israeli army, that the nephew of my Rebbe in Bnei Akiva, Rabbi Meir Kahana's nephew, Menachem Kahana, just went up to Brigadier General. And you have to understand that the name Kahana, a nephew of Meir Kahana, it's Rabbi Nachman's son. The newspapers had a field day interviewing him. Haaretz was jumping off the roof with its reporters. And he today is a Tata Luf B'Tzvah Haganali Yisrael. I can also tell you in parentheses that one of the brigadier generals in the army is a future Hasidic Rebbe. Do you know who I'm talking about? Hoshea Friedman, the son of Rabbi Yisrael Friedman, the Pashkana Rebbe, the brother-in-law of the Vishnitzer Rebbe. This is from Gilo, his son, Vasitzt Ebenon, and next to the father at every Hitvadut, at every Fabrengen, is Tat Aluf in the Israeli army, Brigadier General Hoshea Friedman. So with this being said, I give you a picture. It's been a long process. It didn't happen overnight. But the army today, thanks to Ben-Gurion, it is an army for everyone. We all belong. We're all part of it. We can all feel at home. And ultimately, it's the greatest gift that we have, because Jews of various types, thinking, actions, dress, outlook, learn to live with each other. I went and run off. I have much more to say, but I don't want to keep you all night. I want to end off with 2 concepts that you should appreciate. The miracle of the Israeli army. And in the second concept, I'll touch upon one of the moments of revelation. I've had a number of times when Eliyahu HaNavi has tapped me on the shoulder. And you'll see this is one of them. My eldest son-in-law was a career officer. 20 years, high rank. And of course, he had an army car, he had a driver. And one time my wife had to go to Tel Aviv, and he was going to his base, and he gave my wife a lift. And when he reached the station right outside of Yerushalayim on the main highway where the soldiers wait for a lift, the car stops, and my son-in-law, being who he is, he's also president of his shul, etc., he walks out, not the driver, he walks out, and he's going to ask the soldiers waiting where you have to go and pick out the ones that he can give a lift, be closest to. And my wife fainted. She couldn't believe what she saw. My son-in-law walks out, and all the soldiers immediately salute him. He's a high-ranking officer. And when my wife came home and told me the story, I said, this is one of the greatest achievements of the modern state of Israel, that one Jew can salute another Jew. I want to ask the rabbi, when was the last time they saluted you, Rabbi, Talmid Chacham, Av Beit Din, and you walked in? I want to ask the president of the shul, when is the last time they said, when's the yet? What salute, criticism, we can do better, this guy doesn't know. We have, and to have a chain of command, and that one Jew should salute another Jew, Ashrei Ayin Ra'atazot, and I mean this with all sincerity, it's a deep, penetrating thought. It can't have an army run like a shul with gabayim and offices and divisions and subdivisions and chachamim and semi chachanim and goyim and tipshim. But then I want to say something else, and this is the heart of the miracle. 1977, when I left America, when we left America, I never thought we'd see America again. You know, we were very poor kids. I was a Rosh Yeshiva at YU. I was telling the class, I have a lot of older people sitting in. Everyone was laughing and crying. I was I was in the rabbinate and YU, and I was making, and YU paid me a salary. Well, it's 1960 money, $4,200 a year in the rabbinate. I got Ronnie Ackerman, are you here, Ronnie? Here, I have a balabas, a young man who knew me as a kid in the rabbinate, Maplewood, the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. The shul paid me $2,000 while you paid the shul another $2,000 to pay me. I was the first rabbi to build the shul. So here you are, making a small living, surviving the Six-Day War. We couldn't remain in America anymore. And my wife grabbed me by the nose and said, that's it, we're going in Aliyah, Baruch Hashem. I never thought I'd see America again. All right, then I'm integrated, I'm doing things, I'm in the army, I'm teaching, BMT, we're making history. And the government of Israel sends me back in 1977 to address the Rabbinical Council of America convention. And a few other speaking engagements, one of them in Detroit, Southfield, Michigan, I believe it was, Young Israel. And here I am, a young man representing Israel. Hundreds of people have come out. And I end off my talk, and I tell them, let me tell you what I have been told and read about, what happened at that time, 70, 80 years ago in Eastern Europe. Few lived in Europe at that time, and I'm a Jew who's lived for hundreds of years, as you know from my scholarship. I don't just write it and research it, I live it. Okay. I was privileged, as I spoke about last night, the Shanghai crowd, Moriu Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, who I spoke about today. I've lived with them. I lived where they lived. I saw them, their native habitat. No, Rabbanim then were paid to sit and learn, and Paskin Shilas, a Rav of a big shtat, of a big young Israel, 150 years ago, spoke twice a year, Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Tshuva. Right or wrong? That was odd, but Yidden Daf M'Havna Drasha, Jews need a Drasha. So there were people who specialized in drashot. They were known as itinerant magidim, the Dubna Magid. They were famous magidim. So there was one magid in Europe, the end of the 1800s. He ran around giving a drasha. He came to Grodno, and everyone came out to hear the drasha. Reb Shimon Shkop, the Rosh Yeshiva, Bryansk, Grodno, later tells an Odom Gadol. And the Zionists were first beginning to talk it up, to dream about going back to Eretz Yisrael. And of course, many religious Jews were not happy about it. The leaders of the movement, some of them already were not religious, were not Shomer Shabbos. And the Darshan begin. I'm living it in Yiddish. Does everyone understand Yiddish? No. Was kann ich tun? Very hard for me, but I'm living it in Yiddish. I'll try to say it in English. What do these foolish Zionists, what are they talking about? Was trachten sie? All right, we're going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. The Palestinians are going to let us take it? We're going to have to go to war. Going to have to go to war. No, Mizayna Yiddish Army, we're a Jewish army. We'll have to get a Kohen Mashuach Milchama, what the Torah talks about, what the Gemara in Sota talks about, what the Rambam talks about in Hilchot Malachim. We're going to have to get a Kohen anointed to lead the Jews into the war. And the Kohen will call all the Jews together. 100,000 soldiers will turn out healthy young Jewish boys. But then the Kohen has to go on. No, who here just got engaged? 25,000 men getting engaged, dreaming of getting engaged, polishing to get engaged, 25,000 disappear. Mi bana bayit, who here built the house? He built the house, he extended the house. I see like the Beit Menachem. They tell me it's been standing there how many years already? Another 25,000 disappear. Then Mina Takeren, who planted a vineyard, who planted trees. Did you eat the fruit yet? Then you have 25,000 left. Then he goes, Umi Hayish Hayarei V'rachaleivav. And Chazal tell us, what does it mean that you're frightened that you talk during davening? Hashach, no, talk during davening. We banish a loylam. Who are you left with and the Maggid is building up? Mitver bleibt machen der Krieg. And who are we left with to fight the war? The Chofetz Chaim, Reb Yitzchak Chanan Spector, the Belzer Rebbe, the Gerer Rebbe, Gamed die Altere Menschen und Macht Milchama. Go with these four old timers and make a war. What will happen to us in that battle? And this is what the Zionists want to do. And the whole audience was hysterical, including Reb Shimon Shkop. And I ended off the drasha and take a look what we are privileged, la'an zachinu, where we are today, that the IDF is the most powerful and feared and authentic military force, Baruch Hashem, in the world. The minute I ended, everyone broke into applause, and a wheelchair is pushed forward, a man of 102 years old, and he falls onto me, and he's crying, Wie kennst du das? How do you know this? Ich hab gewendet, I was there. I was the Talmud of Reb Shimon Shkop. And what you described, absolutely true. Reb Shimon was hysterical with laughter. That's a moment of Gilui Eliyahu. Ashreinu shezachinu. But I have to be honest, and I have to tell your rabbi, you should know the story I told not only was absolutely true, this maggid had one drasha. It's not like we have to give. If I would repeat a shiur, I have no students, so I haven't repeated a shiur since the kollel began in 78. He went to town to town. Do you know what I was told by the family, the Rav's family? He came to Brisk. He got into Zelbed Russia. Reb Chaim was sitting there. Everyone was hysterical. With these Gedolei Yisrael. And Reb Chaim said, what are they laughing? With the Chafetz Chaim, Reb Yitzchok Hanispector, with the Gedolei Rebbe and the Belzer Rebbe, will go to war and we will conquer them. My dear friends, we are part of a great miracle. I compliment the parents here who have children who have joined with the destiny of the Jewish people. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I am part of this destiny of the Jewish people. And I thank you very much for honoring me with your presence at the three small little lectures I gave here. And may we only go. May chayil el chayil, besorah tova, yeshuot v'nechamot, aleinu v'al kol Yisrael.
As I said this morning, Yasher Koach is insufficient. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I just want to show you, if you want to see what's happened in the Israeli army, this is now official gear of the army. Any soldier requesting citizens from the army, this is official army garments. If you want tennis, don't put it on.
Number one, we thank the Marmers for the refreshments we are about to have, and we thank you very much. And Dr. Mark and Joanne, thank you very much. We appreciate. And Rabbi Mamish Kovaldik. Hatzlach and bracha to you.